Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So did you know that just by wearing Vivo barefoot shoes or going barefoot for the majority of your day, you can increase your foot strength by over 60%? I think that's so incredibly profound, especially based on how often Jen and I talk about our feet and how important they are to our movement. Literally wearing Vivos can change your life. And I'm not just saying that. So if you want to start on that journey with Jen and I, we've both been wearing Vivos for over 2 years, almost 3 years now, and it has significantly helped open up our feet and the way that we move in general. Go check out the link in the show notes.
We've had a code change, so make sure you use code TOB so that you get 15% off. That is TOB, like the Optimal Body Podcast.
Get yourself a pair of shoes that's really going to help revolutionize your understanding of what it means to feel the ground and feel how your feet move underneath you. You have a 100-day trial period that you can send them back to Vivo. No questions asked if they didn't completely work for you. But for now, check the link in the show notes. Use TOB15 for 15% off and get on your Vivo barefoot journey with us. Now, time for the episode. All right, so welcome back to another PT Pearl. This time, we're going to be talking about meniscus and meniscal injury of the knee. So what is the meniscus? Should I dive right in?
Yeah.
So the menisci are these two little C-shaped or moon-shaped pads in the knee, basically, that offer a lot of the cushioning for the impact that goes through those knees. And it just offers a lot of surface area. They're a super complex tissue with all these different layers, and they're very hydrated, especially earlier in life, but they take a lot of pressure. So different people, for different reasons, of course, will get injury. And the thing about these pads is they have vascularization, meaning that they just get blood flow only kind of on the outer bits of them, and the insides don't get a ton of vascularization, so blood flow or nerve input. So it's just very variable as to what we do with them when people have injuries or if there are tears, what kind of tear it is, what layer of the meniscus it's in, how are we going to deal with that. So we're not going to dive too much into like the research and stuff of this. We're more so going to talk about things that we can do to help optimize the way the knees might be feeling.
Exactly. Because especially with that, talking vascular, avascular, again, meaning just that blood flow, there's a portion of the meniscus that can heal itself. But even with a portion that can't quite heal itself, it doesn't necessarily mean that you run to surgery first. Our first recommendation is always, as we're physical therapists, is usually getting conservative treatment first. So working through some of the issues that we're going to be talking about, of some of the exercises that you should be thinking about that can help to support and offload the knee. Now, of course, if you are in injury and pain right now, please go see a medical doctor. We are not your medical doctors. We are not here to tell you exactly your treatment plan for your knee. We are here to provide what we believe, you know, can help support someone to either avoid having this knee injury in the first place and just help you to understand how it's working in the body and how that could be caused. Because that's the other thing. Like, just because you're going to have surgery doesn't mean that it's going to fix whatever led to that positioning anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's reasons we put more pressure through the knees, and that can be because of a multitude of different things. So yeah. aren't there certain populations that this does happen more in than others though, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, especially if we're talking degenerative meniscal injury. So that usually comes, it's degenerative, as is most things in our body, you know, or later on in life. So meaning 60s and above, usually you're going to see this coming up on imaging more often than not. Even if you don't have symptoms or pain or anything happening in the knee, you might have degenerative changes on the image. And this also usually goes in conjunction with osteoarthritis in the knee as you get older, again, above 60, and these different changes that are happening.
Yeah. And the other kind of group that will have these more often than others is athletes or people in that, you know, younger age range that are just doing a lot of impact to the knees. that have more of a traumatic injury because they pushed their body to a position that they weren't comfortable in, they weren't mm-hmm. safe in, and they couldn't control in. And then we have traumatic injury, which is something that I had happen to me.
Yes.
And that, again, we're going to talk into some of the restrictions that I've been working on as we talk into how to progress your body into understanding why you're putting more pressure through those knees. But, you know, I was playing football all throughout college and I never quite injured myself on the field. And then, of course, when I'm messing around with my buddy on the snow, we're like shoving around and my foot slipped and caught into a dry patch and twisted. And the next morning I wake up and my knee's all swollen because I remember it happened and I kind of went down, but I got back up nice and quick because we're just messing around and noticed something was wrong with my knee, but it was nice and swollen for about a month. I was honestly still doing all sorts of activity and stuff. Finally went into the doctor's office and he comes back in after the image or the MRI and he says, "Oh my gosh, this is like a really bad bucket handle tear," and blah, blah, blah. And he was shocked that I could still even like move my knee through the full range. So I had 1 year of football left. I'm like, "Take it out, doc. I got to play football." And had a meniscus surgery on one side. And then turns out in PT school, I was trying to offload my knees by doing a little swimming and doing a really hard whip kick or frog kick in the pool. Of course, I get out of the pool after that and I had the same exact feeling in my left knee. And I'm just like, what the heck? Like, I'm trying to do this to take pressure off my knees. And I tore my left meniscus, or I never had an image of it, but all of my PT professors started to do tests on it. They're like, "Yeah, you probably tore your medial meniscus of your left knee." But the complete difference in how they approach it was just like, "You're fine. Like, you still have good strength. You still have good, mm-hmm. you know, range of motion at your knee. We've gone over this already. You know what to do for this." Mm-hmm. And so that was so empowering to me.
Oh my God. Yeah. Instead of saying, "Oh my gosh, this is so horrible. You're going to have surgery." And I love that that's how they really prepped it in your mind. And I wish that we would focus, you know, I wish that your original doctor would have focused more on like, "Oh, look, you have full range of motion.
Yeah.
You've been playing on this already. Let's try to send you to therapy first before we initially do the cleanup," which honestly, a cleanup is arthroscopic. It's not terrible.
Yeah.
To go in and kind of clean something up. You're up and you're walking the next day and it's not a invasive surgery or anything. But it's still like, what are the measures that we can take now, you know, to maybe prevent surgery mm-hmm. or not be so afraid of it? And that's really what we want to start to guide into based on these exercises we're going to talk about, that you can just start to think about your body in a different way, hopefully. Okay, before we continue on, I just want to bring up something that we've talked about and shared before, which is the Koba board. And this is like a home equipment that you can use to really help to build that back of the body, the posterior chain, those hamstrings and those glutes, which a lot of people feel like they don't have access to. They try squats, they try deadlifts, they try all these exercises, the hip thrusts and bridges that are supposed to build the glutes, and they just end up feeling quads and knees. Well, this board is just shaped in a way that naturally puts your body in a good position. And if you want to check it out, we highly recommend, we're going to drop the link in the show notes, but you can just use code OPTIMAL at checkout and you get 15% off this board. And again, it's such an easy board to change resistance on, to just stow away somewhere, because it's just a board. I mean, you can just literally place it underneath the bed and then pull it out when you want to start really implementing these exercises that help to take pressure off of the knees and get those glutes and hips moving and feeling good again.
Because a lot of them are the restrictions I have, why don't we just dive right in?
Yeah.
I know that you talk a lot about your neighbors, and if you have neighbors that aren't, you know, great, the knee is going to take a lot more pressure. So those yes. neighbors being the ankle and the hip. If we have limitation in mobility at the ankle and hip, we likely are going to compensate through the knee.
Yeah. The knee just becomes victim because it's overworking now for what's not working well at the ankle and at the hip. And so, especially at the ankle, when we're talking about the restriction, you're probably more looking at, because meniscal injury happens more with kneeling and squatting and going down into that deep squat position. We're especially degenerative. That's like, you know, working overtime in that squatting position. If you don't have good ankle dorsiflexion, meaning the top of the foot is coming up toward the shin, that is ankle dorsiflexion. And one of the ways that you could just test this, if you go all the way down to the ground and you kind of put your, and you just like how can I, like, small kneel? It's not half kneel.
You have one foot on the ground and you're kneeling down on the other one. Yeah.
And you just try to see, like, can I even lean my knee over my toe? If your knee does not go past your toe without your heel lifting up, you probably have a restriction in your ankle.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that I work on every day, along with hip mobility.
Yes.
If our hips aren't able to rotate well, and if our hips aren't able to then control through that rotation, we might tend to compensate by, well, first of all, with the foot, we might tend to compensate for lack of dorsiflexion by rotating our feet out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a problem. And that's something I did all throughout college, where then my knees would, even if I would rotate my hips out as far as I could, my knees would still fall kind of inside my toes when I would do heavy squats and things like that. So I was just kind of setting myself up for it.
But that is so common, like, yeah, that I see all the time. And it almost makes me cringe sometimes, because it's just a lack of awareness. It's just like, oh, I don't even realize that my feet are so wide. I've been told I should put my feet out even wider if I don't have good hip mobility, right? But what happens if you turn your feet out, or you make them so wide that your hips cannot follow the upper legs, mm-hmm, that connect into your hips cannot follow, the knee ends up going on the inside of that toe. And it's just that rotation and that torque over and over again could potentially, we're not saying it is, but it could potentially lead to some torque and discomfort at that knee joint.
Yeah. And so from the ankle, then we go up to the hip, and a place that a lot of people don't explore a ton is their mobility into rotation, right? Or they're more so great at rotating in one direction and not the other. So yeah, one of Jen's favorites, and this has become one of my favorites, is the 90-90, if I can fit on this table. The 90-90, where you kind of sit with 90s, and we've gone over this before, and you can test both your internal rotation by sitting back into that hip and then leaning forward to kind of test the external rotation at either of those hips as well.
Yeah, and we've shown this a million times. So if you just scroll Instagram or YouTube at Dr. Jen Fit or Dr. Dom DPT, you will find these, I promise you. And it's just a really easy way to start to explore the hip in this rotation, because again, you need rotation in the hip if you want better flexion. It's just better squatting, I should say. It just goes hand in hand. Okay, so then what do we do after we open up mobility?
So I would say, how much is your knee actively moving in the different ranges and the different planes that the knee can move? So our knee moves both in flexion and extension, and also in rotation. And there's easy ways to kind of actively just see, okay, how much can I extend that knee actively or straighten that knee actively? And how much can I flex that knee actively or bend it actively without pain or without approaching any of that discomfort?
Exactly. And that's like, can you do it laying on your back? Can you do it laying on your stomach? Can you do it standing? How much can you bend that knee up into your bottom, that heel to your bottom? And sometimes it's not just an active, like, hamstring thing. It's also a mobility in the quad. Remember, like, if you're getting trouble, like, pulling that leg into its full range of motion, don't just look at how much strength you need into that range, but look at what could be restricting it on the other side. And that's the quad, that top of the thigh, that could be really restrictive and adding a lot of pressure into that knee as well.
Totally. And then we have the tibial rotation, which is a tough thing to explain over a podcast, of course, but just that's one of the things that it's those twisting injuries that are, or the twisting mechanism that is where a lot of these meniscal injuries happen. So if you can get used to rotating that tibia actively, isolating what you're doing with your thigh and getting used to rotating that lower part of your leg.
Yeah, the lower leg. Tibia is the lower part of the leg underneath the knee.
Totally. And then just exploring that. How much can you rotate it? How much can you rotate it the other way? It's kind of shocking how little we can actively move that, but when you put a little bit of attention into it, you can get some progression there.
Yeah. So that's what we have to realize, is that a leg doesn't just bend and extend. It actually does have a little bit of rotation. And when we just start to get that brain and the body connection used to that rotating, then it's when we can start to move it into standing and do some different ranges standing, which we're not going to necessarily show through the podcast right now. But this is just a way of being able to explain again, like, we can't just look at, oh, I just need to strengthen my hip.
Yeah.
Or I just need to put more stretching on my knee. Like, it is not just one thing. It could be a multitude of things. It could be what's happening at the foot. It could be what's happening at the hip. And that's why when you say, what do I do for my meniscus? It's not always the best question.
Yeah. Usually the question to ask is, why am I putting that extra pressure through the meniscus? Mm. And I think some of the things we've gone through already can help point out to just the average person, okay, I'm limited here and I've been compensating through the knee. And that's a tough thing, especially for me, who was a college athlete, like to admit, like, man, I really just need to come back to some of this basic stuff. And yes, hip stabilization exercises are great, especially
totally.
If, you know, it's that's where we need to start. Just getting those hips used to activating through that range, then coming to standing and working into some different squats versus hinges. And when mm-hmm. we're loading more into the hip through a hinge pattern versus putting a little more pressure through the knee in a squat pattern.
So that just means, like, again, almost like think of a deadlift. That's where that hip hinge you might have seen, like where someone puts a stick or dowel behind their head and they want to keep it touching, you know, all
touching
the way
their whole, yeah, back.
From the back into the pelvis, into the top of the head, and then moving in a straight line. Can I bend from my hips and stand back up without rounding through my spine and without having to bend a ton into my knees? And when you can do that, that's where you really start to own that access point, which is our hips. And that's what I always say, like, our hips are our access point. This is where we need to move from the mm-hmm. upper body to the lower body. And that's why our hips become so powerful. So that's, again, you know, learning all these strengthening exercises and hip hinging patterns in standing becomes so valuable. But that's where we don't just want to do posterior chain, meaning the back of the body, hip hinging, deadlifting, squatting, where we're only filling our glutes. Here's the other thing that I hear a lot that I just got to put in there is that people say glute amnesia, right? My glutes have turned off. They're mm-hmm. no longer awake. If you can stand, if you can walk, your glutes are not shut off. Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, maybe you'd fall straight forward.
You would fall completely to the ground. So it's not that you have complete amnesia within those glutes. Don't be so afraid that, like, oh, it's not activating at all. And, like, I've had a client where she was at a previous clinician where she was just like, I just cannot activate my glutes at all. They just don't turn on. They do turn on. You just might not have that awareness built in right now. And that's what us as clinicians should be helping you with. Not telling you that it's wrong, it's bad, you're not doing it. Just yeah. helping you to understand it in your body.
We're all somewhere along that spectrum where we, yeah, might not use the glutes currently that much. And if we've been doing that for a long time, it's kind of difficult to wake them up. Mm-hmm. And that's, like Jen said, where a clinician's really going to help with that. And she mentioned when we start with the hip and start in a very hip dominant pattern mm-hmm. that keeps the knees in a safe place, which is why it's great for us to kind of start there to learn how to control that knee in a safe position to do those hinging and squatting patterns. And that's when we might want to then move into things that are a little more challenging and demanding on the knees,
yeah,
so that we can
also
progress
safe.
From there. Also safe.
Always
like safe.
I don't want to say that, like, one thing is safe or not safe. It unloads the knee when you do a lot of hip stuff, so it becomes less pressure, so we can decrease the symptoms that you might be having at the knee initially.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then that's where, once we get really used to doing those hip hinging patterns, maybe moving to one leg and getting used to doing things on a single leg, because then that knee is kind of on its own. It doesn't have its other leg to partner and buddy with and be like, hey, you're there to support me. It's okay. We still can work into some of those mini squats. I love a four-way mini squat is one of my favorites to do personally, because it gets me on one leg, reaching a foot out to the side, doing a little bend and tap, reaching a foot out front, doing a little bend and tap, crossing my body, and then going to the back, because it teaches my hip through all those range of motion to keep my knee in a good, safe, comfortable position when I'm on one leg.
Yeah. And then after we learn kind of those patternings and we kind of build up that back chain, we cannot forget about the front chain. Okay. It is not just about, let me just strengthening in the hips and that's going to help my knee completely, because the reality is, as you walk downstairs, your knee is going to pass your toe. As you turn and you go and run after your child, your knee is going to rotate in. So it's, how can I then create the strength necessary in my knee to be able to better tolerate these positions. Because we are not preventing injury, but we're making our body more prone to
controlling and feeling safe and having control in those motions when we get put in them in the future. Because again, we like to think that we can always control our environment, but
we can't.
You know, kid runs one way, dog runs the other way, and we twist and we turn. And if we've been training those, and if we've been training ourselves to get into kind of these positions that, again, might be challenging and demanding, but we can safely progress into, and we can create that preparedness in our body to be ready for those when we get presented with them. Again, that's kind of why we're showing you this progression to places that you might think are unsafe because that's what has been taught to us at this point.
Yes. And that's the whole point of like opening up the language of like, it's not that it's not safe to put your knee forward. It's just that we get to work progressively of how you can in your body safely push it forward without all of a sudden putting so much load and saying, okay, now we're just going to what a common exercise called sissy squat. You can Google that and look it up. Sissy squat. I'm just going to go all the way down to the ground and come back up. No, it takes a progression. Just like anything, just like if I'm going to start squatting, I'm going to progressively add more load. I'm not just going to go pick up a heavy barbell, hopefully. Right? So it's like the same thing with your knees. If I'm going to train my knee how to tolerate more load forward, which I will urge you, do not neglect it. I don't care how old you are. Don't neglect your knee coming forward. It's just that you want to be smart, work with someone if you're unsure of how to pattern it, and start to become comfortable in different positions of that knee going forward, going side, kind of twisting, and creating that whole stability from your foot even up the chain to your hip.
Yeah. And it's all the progression. Again, that's not the first thing you're going to start with. So if you've done everything in order, that's not going to be something that is as scary once you get to it. It's going to seem like an appropriate challenge for you.
Exactly.
So hopefully all that progression kind of made sense and was easy to follow. It's kind of tough for us to talk through it sometimes. But again, we've shown all of these things on our social medias. Look those up. Google the things we're talking about. And thanks so much for joining us on this PT Pearl.
Yeah. I hope you feel like you learned a little bit more about the knees and feel more empowered to take action in what you can do. Now, again, if you want to check out that Koba board so that you build those glutes and take pressure off of those knees a little bit, build those hips in a healthy way, don't forget to check out Koba board. We're dropping the link in the show notes and you can use code OPTIMAL at checkout. You get 15% off. And of course, please subscribe and come back because we have so much more education coming at you.